You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. We are back after our Hurricane Sandy-caused hiatus. I'm your host, same old Sean, and we got a whole bunch of new stuff coming up here. New theme music, as you can hear. New website coming soon. We'll give you the details on that. And new guests, including the awesome Styles P, who we'll be talking to this week. Most of you know him, I'm sure, from his work with The Lox, Bad Boy Records days, and his solo stuff. He has a new fantastic record out, The World's Most Hardest MC Project. And I talked to him at this really cool juice bar that he owns up in the Bronx called Juices for Life. I went up there, hung out, and chatted with him. The first thing I talked to Styles about was basically about the election that at that point had just gone down. So here's our chat with the ghost, Styles P. Since the election just happened, right? Yeah. You had that line on the song you did with Pharoah, where you said, you know, voted for, you know, projects feeling like lab rats voted for Obama, hoping he wouldn't have that. Very hopeful thing, right,
yeah,
about him. So now that his first term is over and he was reelected and you're looking back on it, what are your thoughts?
He had a lot to work with. I'm glad he won this election. I went out and vote. I'm glad he won. And mainly because I feel like Republicans represent rich people, Democrats represent middle class people, and no one really represents poor people.
Right.
So Democrats are the closest to poor
closest
people.
You got, yeah.
So, you know, I try to keep it Democrat. I think he inherited a lot of, when he became president, he inherited a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And, I just tend to think, like, with me, like, you know, Clinton, cool, relaxed guy, played the sax,
yeah,
you know, listens to jazz, you know what I'm saying? No war. You feel like you're not going to get a war with Democrats. It feels like Republicans, more money definitely flows through the country, you know what I'm saying? But I personally feel like more money comes in, more drugs get sold, and it's a higher crime rate, and it's a higher conviction rate.
Yeah.
I mean, the same shit happens under Democrats, too, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
I just feel like it's higher with Republicans, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
then I also feel like war is never necessary. You know what I mean? I feel war is a way for the countries, governments, politicians to make money. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's no need for war ever, really. You know, and practically never.
Yeah.
Not gonna say never, because
sure,
some situations you never know.
Anything,
you, never know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But most of the time, it seems like things could be resolved, but it's on a bigger level. And then I kind of think, you know, sometimes I actually think I don't know if my vote counts. I really don't, to be honest with you. Like.
Yeah.
Or if anyone's vote counts.
Right.
But I know it's important for the government to know that we give a fuck about voting, whether it's for Obama or Romney, Democrat or Republican. I think it's just important for them to know that people from all races, all genres, everywhere give a fuck about what's going on with the government. And I think that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I think I think a lot of people, I mean, with Obama being black is definitely part of it, but before we even, a lot of people even knew about Obama, Like, you know what I'm saying? Or he was, we heard him, seen him on Oprah, heard about his books,
yeah.
or anything. Seriously, like, if you went in a hood barbershop, you would hear, like, fuck Bush, like, get the soldiers home. And that meant a lot if you could be sitting in the ghetto somewhere in the barbershop and hear politics. And, you know, I've been in the barbershop for most of my life, and you really don't hear politics no more. So that just showed that even fuck hip-hop as young people, whether it be white, black, Spanish, that young people were paying attention to what was going on with politics, which means a lot, because when I was young, I really didn't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? Like, it meant something, but it didn't mean too much. Like, you know what I mean? So I think with just the point of the younger generation realizing, hey, like, why we got all these troops? Why are we spending all this money? Why are we invading these countries when we have our own problems? I thought that was important for mankind. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that made it possible for Obama to get elected. Or if not Obama, if Hillary would have won, I think Hillary would have got elected.
Yeah.
I think it's time for change, and it's time for change in society. And racism will always live. Because what people don't tend to know is white people are racist against white people, black people are racist against black people, Spanish people are racist against Spanish people. You know what I mean? Like, you go back to the days, you'll hear an Italian guy go, fuck the Irish guy, fuck the Jew, vice versa. You'll hear African or Jamaican doesn't fuck with the African American, black as much. You hear Puerto Rican say, fuck the Dominican. So I think racism will always be here, but I think we just ask people have to get it to a point where it comes important to what's important to a man and his family as a man more than anything, and that means people should go out and vote, because it really matters.
Yeah.
Like, you understand what I'm saying? Because realistically, Obama wouldn't be president if it still wasn't for white people. Because it took a certain amount of white people to go, hey, I'm going to go vote for him. And then even those who didn't the second time, or that did, it was needed. So it's a needed thing. And then hopefully this will mean something when there isn't a black president in the election. If it's two whites, or white Spanish, white female, whatever, that people take interest in voting for the policy that works for them, not just...
You said something interesting there a minute ago, kind of at the beginning of that, about you said, I think more drugs came into the country under the Republican leadership.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Reagan. Reminded me of the crack that I met. Because you had that line, you said, in good times, sort of the era, you know, where they caused terror over guns and crack.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about something with that line. I was thinking about so many artists in your generation. The crack epidemic was this really formative experience.
Yeah.
You have a whole generation of artists now where that's not true. And I was wondering what you thought, kind of looking at people where this was no longer like a central experience in their art.
I mean, I think it's great. You know what I mean?
Sure.
First and foremost, I think it's great. But at the same time, you see different things. Hmm. I think it's great that didn't happen. But I think from them not having that or having that experience...
Yeah.
Leads them to be so willing to take a Molly or X or whatever this other shit that they take. Now I think you have more people actually on drugs than that sell drugs. Mm-hmm. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It's like, it's great that they have to go through that experience, but now you have a whole... You can tell a young hip-hop generation 10 years ago to do a drug that was anything other than weed or alcohol.
Right.
Until you get the fuck out of here, you're fucking out.
Right. Now you've seen everything destroyed.
You've seen everything be destroyed by that.
Yes.
Now you have a young generation that didn't see that things being destroyed, but are destroying themselves because they've never seen anything destroyed before.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like a double-edged sword. It's like a flip side of the coin.
Yeah.
Like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Like,
sure.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of both ways, because really, like, if you look at younger hip hop right now, it's like, I don't think you would have been able to give me on any of my friends anything that wasn't in a bag and smelled like a plant. Like, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it'd be cool, but it's a different time now.
Yeah, on that same note, on Feelings Gone,
You had that line about you sort of get at people for, you know, thinking the pain is cool, for sort of glorifying the kind of stuff you're talking about. And I was wondering how you, as a writer, as an artist, how you talk about struggle, hard times, without appearing to make it sound glamorous.
I think it's just being honest. I think if you feel people's pain and you know what struggle and hard time is,
yeah,
and you paint a picture, it's just you giving what you feel. Like you know what I mean? Because if you haven't been through pain, it's hard to feel pain. Like, you know what I'm saying? Or when you understand pain, it's easier for you to identify without glorifying, to say, hell, we've been through this pain, but we know from being through this pain that it's not cool. I think a lot of things with music, people misunderstand what a gangster is or what a street person is. And I think they think people glorify things that they actually do glorify, but they're still horrified by it. Like, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way, and I can tell you from experience, there's no way when you get to a point of when you learn to accept pain or become consciously aware of that you're risking freedom and all the things you're going, it's a fucked up state of mind of being. When you don't know, it's different. Like, you understand? Because when you first get into something, that's within any dirt. That's not even just the streets. That's just dirt, period. Like, what you just do in dirt. If you do dirt and you're not knowledgeable of what you're doing, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's say you got a girlfriend and you talk to her like shit every day, but you're not knowledgeable that you're talking to her like shit,
yeah,
and that you're making her feel small and lose her self-esteem and her confidence. It's different than when you know, all right, I'm talking to this woman like shit. She has no self-esteem, low confidence, and I know this is going to hurt her. It's different. Like, you know what I'm saying? Then when you within yourself, you feel like this is not the right thing to do. So there's a lot of people outside who knows this is not the right thing to do, but if this is what I gotta do, I'm gonna do it and be good at it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Because
this is just what I do. But I think when you come to a pain, I think that's why I know how to express pain without so much glorifying it, because I know the person who's really in the pain doesn't want to glorify it neither. But some people don't know better on the position in where that's the life they live. And, you know, and it is what it is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. You had that great line on Amit G about, you know, you feel someone's pain, but they don't feel yours.
Yeah.
And that really struck me. Why do you think that is? Do you feel like you're good at getting inside people's heads and maybe you don't feel that reciprocated?
I've been there, so I know what it's like for a person on a, you know, a dude outside to feel he doesn't know where he's going to turn, what he's going to do. You know, that he doesn't want to do this. I've been a kid who's actually sold drugs and worked a real legal job at the same time, just from the urge of wanting more and feeling like I have no options but to do this because I don't have any other lanes that's open to me where I could say, here, in 5 years, you know, I got this plan, I'm going to do this, so I have a plan. Because when you don't have a goal or you don't have a plan, which a lot of people don't in bad situations, whether you're a minority or not, you're just poor. Because I think the new minority is poor. Me personally, like, you know what I mean? You could be racist if you want, but if you're poor, you're in the same boat as other poor people.
Yeah.
If you're rich, you could be racist if you want, but you still could do what other rich people could do, no matter who's around you, who's racist or what, and they have to accept it.
Yeah.
So both sides of the spectrum is like where you fit in and what you could do. So you start to get an understanding of people more, like of people. Like, I live with this. Nothing but rich people. All my neighbors are rich. If not, they're successful. There's nobody poor around me. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I see the difference between rich and poor people. Like, you understand what I'm saying? I see what makes rich people happy, what makes poor people happy. I see that poor people lack finances. I see that rich people lack soul. Like, you know what I mean? And so when you start to understand that about society in general and of different things, like people don't know, there's white boys who grew up on nothing but hip hop their whole life. So everything they feel is hip hop related. So you might be looking at them thinking, hey, that's a white kid, he lives upstate. I used to live upstate in Corlett Manor. Like, and this kid would know more about
any fucking rapper you name than anybody you could pull in the hood that was outside and selling crack, selling drugs on the urban corner in a population where it's all black. I could have showed you a white boy from upstate, but could have told you anybody's line from any song dating years. Like, you know what I'm saying? So he's lived off of hip hop. And his parents might not understand him. He has his own tormented life of his own, which you don't think. So you become to understand as you become older, and I think as you're an artist and you get to go more places and meet more people, you start understanding people a little better. And then you know that you never know shit. Like, the biggest thing is I know nothing. But I can just try to see things and try to understand them. And feel people and feel different things and understand different things.
That's awesome. Specifically about your art, one of the things that makes you different than a lot of people to me is the duets. Is you do the duet verse thing really well, obviously with Jada.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I've heard great ones with, you know, Beanie and Fab and, you know, a ton of people. What about that form appeals to you? You know what I mean? Why do you stand out there?
Respect to the craft. Like, respect to the craft. Like, you know what I mean? I think what people don't know is, no matter where you're from or what your education is, to be an MC, you have to be somewhat of a genius. Somewhat of a genius. Because for you to sound intelligent, put words together, flow, give your soul, and have people feel it at the same time, it's a difficult task. It sounds simple and it sounds cool and it sounds just easy, but it's a difficult task. So when you get to a point of understanding, hey, this artist is talented, or, you know, my partner's talented, we're making music, we're trying to hit the people. So it's a you have to be in sync. You have to be in pocket. You have to be in tune. And it's just the thing of respecting the art. Like, it's like when you watch a movie. Like, for me, as an MC, like, a lot of people ask me what I do. To work on my MC, and I read and I watch movies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To watch a movie, and when you watch a movie and you could go, okay, name a movie you like. Name a movie you love, actually.
Okay, an old one. It Happened One Night.
Who stars in that?
That's Clark Gable.
Clark Gable. Now, to look at Clark Gable interact with a supporting cast, to put together a body of work that was time perfect, delivered perfect, and given to you as perfect as humanly possible, is an amazing. It's amazing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I watch Usual Suspects, let's say. And a person might be watching Usual Suspect and watching the movie and the plot, which I'm watching also. But I'm watching how Baldwin and Gabriel Byrne and Kevin Spacey are interacting with each other on time and putting themselves in a position where they have to go. It's on time. Like, I watched Reservoir Dogs the other day. And besides the movie, it's just of Harvey Keitel and Mike Madsen, like, you know, giving off a certain thing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
for
the
actors,
the
intertwine.
The timing and interplay.
It's the timing and the interplay of two talented people coming together for a common goal is amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. If you could capture it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Even a feature, even if it's not an in and out, a feature.
Yeah.
Like, say you make a feature and it hits home. It hits home with a person. Like, you're not hanging with that artist. You're not with that artist. Their life is totally different from yours. But if you could bring the energy to collide and humble yourself enough to go, hey, I know I'm working with Talib Kweli, Pharoah Monch, Rick Ross, Beans, whoever.
Yeah.
I have to bring myself into this element, into this world, to make it make sense. It takes a lot. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think people, when something's beautiful to you and you hear it and things, you take advantage of what's special. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's amazing to fucking look at the TV and how the fuck did they get everything digitally to the form together and the words to come, the picture, color, and everything. When you start thinking of how difficult simple things are, you have a respect for any art, not just music, but for any art tenfold than you originally would have.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Pharoah a second ago, and I wanted to ask you, you know, about, you've worked with a lot, not just once or twice, with two of the real pioneers in this, like, multi-syllable rhyming thing. I'm talking about Pharoah and Kool G Rap.
Yeah.
What did you, from both of them, like, what if anything, did you learn from them? And what, if anything, do you feel you taught them?
I would say the same thing is what I taught is what I learned. Energy. Any MC you work with who's an MC, you taught and you teach them energy, and they teach you and you learn from them energy. Like, you understand what I'm saying? You try to figure their zone or picture their zone to fit into it, to make it sound complete. Like, you know what I mean? For Kool G Rap, I actually feel Kool G Rap is the forefather of what I do. Personally, for me, like, if rap was kung fu or college or something of that nature, I would have to say, you know, I study Kool G Rap.
Why him in particular?
I think it's delivery. I think it's his delivery, his wordplay, his genre. I think he was, me personally, I feel he's the godfather, forefather of hardcore rap, and for what I do.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, Road to the Riches, I understood Road to the Riches from every aspect, from as a inspiring MC, how it was a masterpiece. I understood Road to the Riches as a kid that grew up in the hood and understood that, you know, crack just hit, and shit was different. I understood as a kid that seen Scarface, or knew that, you know, that young people in the hood were influenced by mob figures. Like, you know what I mean? It's a lot in there. Like, a lot of people don't understand how everything is so tied together. It's why we're not so different. Like, you know what I'm saying? The average person, even a genre of gangster rap, they wouldn't understand that every gangster rap, I don't care who you say, I don't care if he wants to admit it or he doesn't want to admit it, is infatuated somewhat with gangster movies, hardcore flicks, real life gangsters, rebels, James Dean types.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just something about that that just strikes. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whether it be Godfather, like, I love Wanderers, I love Warriors, I love Godfather, I love Boondock Saints. It's just certain things they do in Denver While You're Dead. It's just certain things that make up that category and fill in for a gangster rap. Like, Kool G Rap referred to John Gotti.
Right. It would
be like John Gotti, drive a Maserati. So this was implanted in his mind, which he's showing you is implanted in the hood's mind. Like, you know what I'm saying? So most people didn't even get, okay, the same person that I'm scared of is trying to emulate somebody that I would eat next to.
You're a different kind of writer as well. Obviously, recently you started writing fiction.
Yeah.
What's the difference to you in writing fiction and writing rhymes? Do they, like, express different parts of your personality, fill different needs, enable you to tell
fiction,
different kinds of stories? Like,
rhyme is second nature to me. You know what I mean? It's like talking, practically, to me. Writing fiction is using your imagination, but having to be sharp with it. You know, with rhyming, it's more natural for me. I could just, you could play the beat, and I have a sense. Really, like, it's like the beat's talking to me, and I'm just saying what the beat's saying to me or making me think. Like, when you hear a beat, the beat's actually making you think. Like, you know what I'm saying? When you create to a beat, is what a lot of, I try to explain that to someone the other day. I said, see, when I put on a certain beat and the beat comes on or whatever, I'm creating a rhyme, but it's actually the beat that's making me think of the rhyme.
Like, is he hitting a chord in me to say, hey, I'm going to say some hard shit. I'm going to say some deep shit. I'm going to say some fly shit, flashy shit, meaningful shit. I'm going to teach. I'm going to use this sentence to say, and I'm going to use these words. I'm going to use these rhythms. So I'm just kind of really expressing what the beat is making me think or how it's making me feel. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I think at the end of the day, it's just... I love the rhyme, you know what I mean? But writing a fiction novel is fucking hard. You gotta remember what you said on page 107, what you said on page 2, on page 57. It brings me back to my school days. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Bring me back in a position of feeling like a student, feeling like a worker, feeling like I have to accomplish a goal that I'm, you know... It's fun for me when I accomplish it, when I get to the final, to the finish line, but the process isn't as fun as emceeing. Like,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's difficult. It's like, and for me it's difficult because I use so many, you know, I went to high school, obviously. I did a semester at community college. I went to Tipp County Jail, then I got into rap. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's how my life went. So when to stop and say I want to write a book, for me just to even take the time to even write it and overcome, I don't even remember how to fucking, a period goes, a question mark, punctuation mark, commas, and then I have to put myself back in mode of remembering, oh, well, you know how to read. You know where sentences, you know, like, you know, just to put yourself back in thinking mode. And it was difficult, and it's difficult now for me as I work on the second one,
book, right?
Because it's not simple. When something's second nature to you, that's like if I was a basketball player and I was a good dunker, but I had to form a jump shot and I wasn't a natural jump shooter. It's difficult working on the jumper, like, you know what I mean? But I enjoy it because I feel it brings me back to the intelligence that made me an MC in the first place. Because some MCs MC and some MCs know they're intelligent. Like, some MCs know I'm fucking way smart than fucking 95% of the world or 90%. A few motherfuckers is gonna get this. A few motherfuckers is gonna go way over their head. And, like, I know some of the shit I say, some people don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
What's something you might put in that category that you said that you feel like people wouldn't get?
Like the new song, I know. They're gonna hear hard, but they're not gonna hear the angle I'm coming from. They just hearing something hard. They're not hearing, and I'm telling you, I'm experienced. I know this. This is what I see. This is what I like. I'm telling you something, but I'm not gonna tell you all I know. Then they don't know that a man who knows something knows he knows nothing. Like, you know what I'm saying? So many different angles and aspects of where people take you from. Like, for one, that people are just always look at me as a gangster rapper. And they won't ever take time to figure out, hey, the guy had to be fucking somewhat smart or somewhat of a nerd. Like, they never thought that a gangster rapper was a nerd. But most likely he was.
And you're spending your day around words.
Yeah.
You know?
Like. Most likely, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's funny in a sense, but you understand. Like, you understand that everybody's not meant to understand. It's like, some people are going to be nostalgic. You're fucking hard. You're hard. And some people will come to me and just go, yo, that Jew was deep. Or those was deep Jews. Or that was intellectual. Like, some people don't get the intellectual side at all. Like, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And some people don't feel the gangster side at all. They just hear what strikes a chord in them, what strikes a match in them.
Going back to what you're saying about, like, characters and in movies and timing and all that stuff, I noticed in a lot of Lox records, or even if they're not official Lox records, ones where the three of you are, it often starts with Sheik and goes to you and ends with Jaina. What is it about that order, you think?
I think Sheik's the most electrifying out of us, the most energetic, the most, you know. I think I'm the fine line between both of us. Like, you know what I mean? And I think Kiss is the more melodic. The people, you know, receive his tone.
his sound is his voice, his delivery a certain way, and I think I played a middleman.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting. So is that before I said it? No, you never really, realized that was. That
it
was
just it happens sometimes. Actually, it's three different ways it goes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's actually what you just said.
Yeah.
Or it's actually me kiss then she.
Oh, so you end with the super.
Say like it depends on how the track's feeling. Like you know what I'm saying? It depends on how the track's feeling and pretty much the angle.
What's the third
of the
order?
Track? The third one would be Kiss, Chic, Me. You'll notice that on some features with other people, if you notice. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you go back to study, it depends really on the beat and the mood and the tone of the song. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think we're like a Kung Fu style on which we complement each other's style.
Right.
But bring something different to the table.
Yeah.
But know how to blend it in with each other. To make the listener feel at home.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to kind of veer off on that tune Fastlane. You referenced one of my favorite records, the first Brand Nubian album. You know, All for One, like Brand Nubian.
Yeah.
What did you think of that record at the time? Do you remember?
And All for One?
Yeah.
I love All for One. I still remember what I think of it to this day. I think that was one of the very few records where you get message, a happy song, delivery, and lyricism all in one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to capture a moment like that in one song, all those elements.
Yeah.
And for the hip-hop head, you know that's all you get when you hear that song. You get a lot of elements that make sense. And that's like, wow. Like, you know what I'm saying? They gave you something educational. It was fun. It was melodic. It was serious. And there was jewels in it.
Yeah.
How the fuck do you beat that?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That's incredible. And you've talked sometimes about how you feel, you know, like you don't fit in the industry, like you're underrated, like you dislike the sort of stuff around rap.
I actually don't feel underrated. I go with what the people say are feeling me underrated,
mm-hmm.
or that I get called underrated a lot.
So it's not something that you would claim for yourself.
When you have a different idea in your brain, let's say, like you're a journalist, right?
Yeah.
You know fine journalism, you know mediocre journalism, and you know broad journalism, then you know mass journalism. Then you know sometimes there's some journalists that's special that might not get the look because all the people are understanding. Right? For me to be, I would say, I don't have the kind of delivery and the content that goes to the mass world. That should be for the mass world. Just being honest. Like,
yeah.
I don't deliver that kind of content where I should be held on a high pedestal commercial-wise. At least, I don't think so. To be absolute honest with you. You know what I'm saying? My content is too different. Like, so to expect the average 8 to 10 people or 7 to 10 people to be able to be relatable to that would be unrealistic of them. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm respected by all the greats and my peers and the greats, and I work with everybody.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you know that, like, all right, I'm going to say this shit and he might catch on. He might catch on. He might catch on. But the other 7, they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? So you get the feeling of it's the people, you know, that feel that you're underrated. Oh, you're underrated. You're underrated. Nah, I think when I'm delivering, everybody's antennas is not up to catch that. Because that's not, when I'm delivering, it's not for everybody.
Definitely.
Like, you understand what I'm saying? Then sometimes you feel, you know, people always appreciate people more when they're dead. You know what I'm saying? And to be appreciated at all when you're alive and recognized, you feel great. Because I'd rather have an army of 10 that's real than a fake 100. Like, you understand? I'm just going out with whatever's out and it's going to follow the masses. Because nowadays you don't have fans like we had. in the hip hop we grew up in.
Right.
Like, you would tell somebody proudly, yo, I love Tribe Called Quest, but I love KRS. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I love NWA. Not the kids nowadays would be like, yeah, I loved Kanye, but then Drake came out. He was cool. Oh, now I love Waka. But now they don't love Drake and Kanye because they love Waka.
They pick a team.
Yeah. And that's it. Instead of picking a culture, we picked the culture.
Yeah.
And we picked a way of life.
Yeah.
And hip hop is religion for a lot of us. Like, you know what I'm saying? Whereas to now, let's pick a team.
Yeah.
Like, you almost gauge, if you ask the average kid, you know he's going to say, you made back good life, YMCMB.
Right.
As to where our generation, they had a whole batch of people that would have went with that, then it was a whole batch who would have said, nah, I can't fuck with that at all. I just could listen to Talib, Kendrick, and Currency.
Right.
I can't listen to that at all. It's not so much like that anymore. So, it's, you know, you got to understand what you're dealing with.
Yeah. I said one more thing and then maybe get you to do one or two more notes if you don't
cool.
mind. That song Rulebook that you did.
Which one?
Rulebook. You say you just want to live like a Huxtable. And it really caught my ear because I talked to Skyzoo not long ago.
Yeah.
You know, Skyzoo's obsessed with the Cosby Show. And I talked to him a bunch about the influence of the Cosby Show on folks who saw it on TV in the 80s and 90s. And I was just wondering, maybe if you could talk that a little bit. Like, if you remember watching the show, maybe how it influenced you, what you thought
Definitely.
Of it at
the
time.
I remember watching the show, and I remember it... I think it's played, you know, not just lyrically, like life-wise. I think it's played, it made a big impact. Because
yeah.
I think for a lot of people, you know, they might not know that the average black family wants to strive to be the Huxtables. Even the ones who's in the James Evans situations
right.
thinks about being the Huxtables or George Jefferson. That, like, before the Huxtables, it was George Jefferson for me. Because I always wanted to say, hey, I want to live around rich people, live rich, but be myself.
Yeah.
And although the Huxtables wasn't, didn't see a lot of the Huxtables coming up, but it planted a seed in the head that, hey, I could, you know, I could actually do this shit, like, I could actually do this. And I think what a lot of people forget is that everyone, even no matter where you're from, if you're a gangster, you're from the streets, like, even my friends who I say, who are still on the streets, who I've came up with in my time, none of their kids are on the streets. All of their kids are nerds, backpackers, skaters, straight-A students, uppity kids. Like you understand what I'm saying? Everybody strive for a different life, which that's cool. Like, which you want. Like, you know what I'm saying? And this is what I think that the average gangster wasn't able to express. Like, yeah, we're gangsters, but we want to be Bill Cosby. Like, you know what I'm saying? We want to work a legit job, have a good wife, kids, nice place to live, two vehicles, relaxing, everything's, you know, fine, because that's their dream. Like, even gangsters want to live the American dream. Even if it sounds far-fetched, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's really the truth. Everything, I think, from nowadays, from the streets to the non-streets, to hip-hop, to what everybody wants to live the American dream. Everybody wants their kids to be straight and cool and hold their head high and not be involved in the streets. I don't know one gangster who wants his kids on the streets. Like, that thinks that shit is cute. You know, you don't want that. You want something different. So I think the Huxtable set planted a seed in our mind as to where it was something different.
This has been our first post-Sandy episode of Outside the Lines. As always, I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week's episode was produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios. Shouts to him. And I recorded it at Juices for Life in the Bronx. Definitely check it out the next time you're in the BX. Thanks to our show's loyal intern, Sonny Kahara. And the music is by the awesome Psionic. What's up, Dedrick?
Next week, we have the awesome Sean Price, who is going to totally crack you up, talking about lyrics from his new album, Mike Tyson. Thanks for listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. See you next week.